Hello and welcome to Then and Now, 2 hours of classical and new music here on KALW. I'm Sarah Cahill, and tonight we have a very special guest. Composer Pauline Oliveros is here for the 2 hours of this program, and she'll be playing her accordion on the air and also introducing us to some of her new and old recordings. We'll begin now with The Gentle from her album For der Flute, music by Pauline Oliveros. Thank you. Vor der Flut is the name of that album, and the piece is called The Gentle, music by Pauline Oliveris. You're listening to Then and Now, classical new music, every Sunday evening. I'm Sarah Cahill, and my very special guest tonight is Pauline Oliveris, composer, performer, teacher, author, and philosopher. She's had a profound influence on contemporary music through her work with improvisation, electronic music, teaching, myth, ritual, and meditation. Pauline, welcome to KALW.
Thank you, Sarah. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to see you. And we're so lucky here in the Bay Area because you're here half of each year, is that right?
Sort of? Well, not quite that. Yes and no. I am here some of the time physically and then some of the time virtually because I'm now teaching my seminar at Mills in the fall with a couple of appearances. And then the rest of the time on iChat video.
That's great. Does it work well that way?
Yeah, it works just fine. So I can be in two places at once. I've finally learned how to clone myself. Because I'm the rest of the time I'm teaching, as you know, at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York.
Yeah.
But my connection with Mills goes back 50 years.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about that and hearing some pieces that you wrote at Mills, I think, actually, next. You were born in Houston in 1932, and both your mother and your grandmother were piano teachers, and you went to Houston Symphony Concerts, and you listened to the Metropolitan Opera broadcasts and the New York Philharmonic broadcasts, and those were the days when those were on the radio.
Yes, indeed. It was wonderful. And the NBC with Toscanini.
And you were also listening to the sounds of insects and the natural sounds around you, because I think you lived in the countryside. And
well, Houston is a lowland, you know, and the insect and bird population is really quite amazing. Also, wildlife. Except that now that Houston is a sprawling metropolis of asphalt and cement, with 2 million, 3 million people, maybe more now.
So a lot of the habitats are
destroyed.
The house you grew up in is no longer there?
Well, I grew up in a lot of houses, so some of them are there and some of them are not.
And then your mother brought home an accordion. You were about, how old were you?
I was about 8, 9 years old, and so I've been playing it ever since. Yeah, I got fascinated with it.
I think what fascinates me about those memories of your teenage years, and I think you started composing at the age of 16, was that you heard sounds in your head that would later translate into your electronic music.
That's right.
But that it was already sort of formulated, and it was just a matter of realizing it, and realizing it in a way that maybe you couldn't do with classical instruments.
Possibly so. I mean, because I heard a lot of different kinds of sounds in my my mind's ear. I heard music. I heard instrumental kinds of music. I heard sounds that I couldn't identify. I heard all sorts of things that later I recognized as I did make electronic music that they were there. And they all are related to the way that birds and insects sound, and also related to the texture and density of sounds that happen in nature, yes.
There's a piece of yours that's very evocative of that we're going to listen to, which is called Bog Road, that you created at the Mills Tate Music Center in the summer of 1967 with the Buchla Series 100 box. Can you tell us what that is?
Oh, well, in the early days of electronic music, which it was still fairly early days of electronic music in 1967, we had cobbled together a lot of electronic equipment at the San Francisco Tape Music Center, which later was moved to Mills. It was moved to Mills in 1966. And by the way, it's been renamed since then, the Center for Contemporary Music, and it still exists there today. But we were searching for an engineer that could create a music machine for us, a synthesizer, And Don Buchla was the one who did that, on the advice of Mort Subotnick and Ramon Sinder and myself. And so the first studio at Mills Tape Music Center had the first Buchla 100 series box, and I did compose some music with it while I was there.
And there was also the Frog Pond nearby, so maybe
yes,
that was
right out the window.
An influence.
It's still there, so far. And it was full of beautiful sounds in the summer, froggies and all sorts of things. And I used to love to listen to them. So some of those sounds kind of found their way into these series of pieces that were different kinds of bogs that I wrote at that time.
I don't know if we'll have time for the whole thing. It's 33 minutes long. So
oh, well, you've
got a lot of music to play
we
tonight.
We've got a lot of stuff tonight. We could be here all night.
Right. Here's some of Bog Road by Pauline Oliveris. Well, that's not quite right. I think it's
some technical difficulty there. The CD is not.
Yeah, we'll
CD
try the other CD
playing.
Player. We'll just okay. Be patient for 1 second. I don't know what's going on. What we'll do is, I think first we'll play the, you brought in a piece that you did with David Tudor
right.
And Mina Bird.
Right.
So
yes,
maybe
it's called,
we'll do that one first.
It's called Duo for Accordion and Bandoneon with possible Mina Bird Obbligato, the seesaw version. And this piece was composed in 1964. And it was first presented at the San Francisco Tape Music Center during a festival that was created by David Tudor and myself, and included music by John Cage and by Toshi Ichinagi, Alvin Lucier, and myself. And we had gotten together to play in by 1963, and we were rehearsing at my house where there was a Mina Bird who lived there named Ahmed. And I was writing this piece, this duo for us, and when we rehearsed, the Mina Bird wouldn't stop sounding. And so I would try to cover up his cage and keep him get him to shut up. And he wouldn't shut up. And then finally I realized that the Mina Bird was picking up on the music and was, you know, joining us in a wonderfully musical way. And so then I decided, well, we better include the bird in the piece. And that was fine. And then the next thing that happened was that I asked Elizabeth Harris to stage the piece for us. And so she, and to find a way to show the Mina Bird. So she came up with a seesaw, which went up and down and went around and around on a Lazy Susan. And had swivel chairs, and so we were spinning around in space, and the Mina Bird was suspended in a mobile right over the center of the seesaw.
What did that do to the sound?
Oh, it threw it around all over the place. It was really quite wonderful. So some people complain they didn't hear the bird, and you hear the bird in this excerpt as it starts the piece with a little sound, and then it continues. But I think that some people didn't recognize, you know, what the bird was doing.
This is from 1964. It's called Duo for Accordion and Bandoneon with Possible Minor Bird Obbligato.
Thank you.
A recording made exactly 40 years ago, recorded March 30th, 1964 at the San Francisco Tate Music Center. Pauline Olivares and David Tudor with Minor Bird Obligato. That was your Minor Bird, right?
It belonged to a friend of mine, Laurel Johnson, Ahmed the Minor Bird.
It seems like there's a lot going on there theatrically that we can't hear.
Well, that you can't see.
Yeah, that we can't see exactly.
That was the choreography in the on the seesaw, which was going up and down, and we were spinning around on the seats of the seat of the board, as well. So, and the direction would change at times. You know, we could move in any clockwise or counterclockwise, as well as up and down, and as well as spinning on the seats, and the mobile was turning with the bird in the center. And then there was also light that Anthony Martin was doing, you know, together with this performance.
I wish people did more things like that nowadays. Shall we try your Bog Road now?
Oh, well, you want to try the other CD and see if it works.
Let's give it a try.
Yeah, we missed out on that one.
The strangest thing.
I don't know what's
happening.
That's
not your piece.
It's not.
We've tried two different CDs now and two different CD players. It's just...
It doesn't want to play.
Not meant to be.
Better do something else.
Tell me how... We'll figure that out because that's such a gorgeous piece of music, the Bog Road. How many women were working in electronic music when you were in the early 60s?
Well, the only other person that I can think of was B.B. Barron, who she and Louis Barron, her husband, did the music for Forbidden Planet. So they were making electronic music together. But she's the only other woman that I know of at that time that was making electronic music. So
it's amazing.
It was a lonely place there.
Yeah. But when you started working at the Tate Music Center in San Francisco, it sounds like you were very accepted by, I mean, that you were such an integral member of that group with Terry Riley and Ramon Sender.
Well, Terry was not really a part of the San Francisco Tate Music Center, although we premiered his NC for Instruments there, and of course he had a piece on the first manifestation of the, it was called Sonics, before San Francisco Tape Music Center. And so he had a piece on that program that we did in 1960 at the San Francisco Conservatory. So Terry was always kind of around and part of the scene that was going on. But the Tape Music Center core group was Morton Subotnick and Ramon Sender Barayon and myself, Anthony Martin, the visual artist, and William McGinnis, who was a technician at the time.
Now, it's been about 50 years that you've been working with technology of various kinds, and is it making things easier for you, and do you always sort of accept and use the latest sorts of things? I mean, does it come easily to you, or?
Very interesting question, Sarah. Technology has indeed changed, and technology has an exponential that has risen steadily over the millennia. You know, from the beginning of tool making, technology continues to rise. And no matter how many ups and downs there are in the human condition, wars, famine, drought, plague, whatever, technology continues to develop. And so, in fact, 10 years ago there was no World Wide Web, and just look at what has happened in 10 years. But now the exponential of the rise of technology is going to go right straight up as far as acceleration is concerned. And so your question, I digress here. does it get easier? Well, yes and no.
I'm thinking of something. I mean, I know that, for instance, Terry Riley, a piece that he did in the 60s, he could do today using computers instead of using all these big, heavy, you know,
synthesizers.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I wonder if you have some comparable kind of experience where it just makes things a little easier or faster.
What do you mean in terms of dragging stuff around?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, as every 18 months the chip is, you know, has can take much more, you know, many more circuits on it. Yes, things get smaller, and so it's much easier to set up equipment, and it's also contained, for example, in a laptop computer. You can a system that used to take several boxes to carry around now just takes the laptop.
But you still have to carry around your incredibly heavy but beautiful accordion, which you brought in tonight.
Yes, well, that's true. I mean, but an accordion plus a laptop and maybe a pedal board and a couple of pedals is not so much compared to what it used to be. You know, but that's just in terms of dragging stuff around, right? To play a concert. There are other aspects to discuss.
We're going to set up for you to play, but in the meantime, we're going to listen to an unusual piece of yours, early piece, the trio for flute, piano, and page turner. And I got to play this with Monique Bozarte as the page turner and Diane Gruby on the flute at your 70th birthday festivities in San Francisco called Sounding the Margins. Really wonderful event. And it's unusual. It's a fully notated piece, very difficult. The rhythms are very difficult, and you're incredibly specific about the dynamics. Sometimes a, you know, pianissimo over one note and then a fortissimo over another note, and it's just so different from what your music has become.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way I was writing in 1961, mm-hmm. And I have to add that you Diane did a marvelous performance of this piece.
Thank you, and Monique too.
And Monique as the page turner. The page turner, actually, you know, there was when the piece was performed in New York, I think it was some time ago, a long time ago, there was a review that came out in the New York Times, and it was a review of page turners, about page turners through the ages. And because this page turner has to do some work besides turning the pages, that's why the title was such. The page turner has to hold down keys silently for the pianist so that the harmonics will ring out.
And then I come down and hit some chord down here, and Monique and I had to work out who was under and who was over.
Right, exactly. And not only that, you had to turn the page for her, I believe, at one point.
Yes.
At least.
Yes. So let's listen to it now, and meanwhile, we'll set up your accordion.
Okay.
This is Pauline Oliveras, music from 1961, trio for flute, piano, and page turner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Music by Pauline Oliveras from 1961, the trio for flute, piano, and page-turner in a concert recording from the Lorraine Hansberry Theater, the Pauline Oliveras retrospective sounding the margins for her 70th birthday. And that's Diane Gruby on flute, myself, Sarah Cahill on piano, and Monique Buzarte as page-turner. She's a wonderful trombonist who works a lot with you, Pauline.
Right.
Yeah, so before you play, let me ask you a little bit about the concept of deep listening, which is very close to your heart. And I'd like to just read a paragraph that you wrote about deep listening. You say, "As a musician, I am interested in the sensual nature of sound, its power of release and change. In my performances throughout the world, I try to transmit to the audience the way I am experiencing sound as I hear it, and play it in a style that I will call deep listening. Deep listening is listening in every possible way to everything possible to hear, no matter what you are doing. Such intense listening includes the sounds of daily life, of nature, of one's own thoughts, as well as musical sounds. Deep listening is my life practice." And I have to say, when I listened to that piece, the trio, which he wrote in 1961, it makes you listen in a way that I think is unusual in music. The timbres of the notes and how you make the flute and the piano sound alike, and then you make them completely different, and you just play with notions of sound and timbre and contrast. And so it's very interesting that you were, that there's this thread throughout your music from when you were a young girl listening to the insects and the sounds around you in Houston up till now. And you have deep listening retreats. I think you did one today at the Exploratorium.
There was a workshop today at the Exploratorium.
Uh-huh.
And I took people on a blindfolded sound walk through the Exploratorium. They have a project there at the Exploratorium on listening now. And I was invited to be a member of the advisory board for a grant that they submitted to the National Science Foundation and got. So they invited me to do the opening project at the Exploratorium this weekend, which I did from 1 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. And had a group of people, about 25, 30 people, all blindfolded, so that they could really listen to the sound of the Exploratorium. When you close your eyes or wear a blindfold, your auditory sense is heightened, also your kinetic sense. So it was kind of wonderful, because the Exploratorium is really a kind of sonic soup when you walk in there. But if you really listen to it, you hear some very fascinating textures and densities and specific detail sound.
I'm hoping that you'll lead the listening audience tonight on a deep listening exercise, even a brief one at some point. And I don't know, I guess you can't play and do that at the same time, probably.
Oh. Well, Sarah.
I want so many things from you tonight, Pauline.
What is going on?
Maybe we'll wait and do that in a little bit. But since you have your accordion out,
you know, whatever people are doing, there's always something to listen to. And you may be listening to the radio in any number of different ways and places and so on. But as I play, I'm going to be listening and making the music from that listening. not knowing what it is that I'm going to play, and you out there are not knowing what it is you're going to hear, but I know that you're hearing something anyways before I even play. So I'm going to give you the suggestion to include everything that you're hearing around you, along with whatever it is that I'm playing, so that the engagement here then is whatever it is you're listening to with whatever I'm listening to and presenting to you. So let's see how that works as a little exercise out of the ordinary. Okay.
Thank you.
Amazing. Pauline Oliveras here in the KALW studios. You're listening to Then and Now. I'm Sarah Cahill, and this was a special live performance by Pauline Oliveras, who's in the Bay Area for a little while, one of the places that she calls home. That's a gorgeous accordion. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, this is a an accordion which actually I've just had this one since January, so it's a relatively new instrument. It's very like the one I had from 1983 up until January of 2004. It's a Titano accordion that's manufactured in Castelfidardo in Italy. Although most of the accordion factories in Italy have closed down because the instrument is, you know, kind of phasing out. It's a 19th century instrument. It was invented in about 1840 in Austria, and it's a free reed instrument. Free reed is a reed that vibrates in a chamber as air comes through and vibrates it. And this free reed principle is 4,000 years old, at least, and is found in the Asian mouth organs, and first in the Chinese Xing mouth organ. So, you know, it's a...
The Xing is the one you blow into, and there are all the pipes.
The bamboo pipes that stick straight up out of a gourd, and then the player blows into a mouthpiece, and it has finger holes to direct the air into the pipes, and the reeds vibrate. And in the accordion, I mean, the reeds are there, but when you depress a key, it opens a valve that sends air through that box into the reed, or a button. So, anyways, this is a large accordion. It has 160 buttons in the bass side and a row of pedal tones, very deep tones, and the range goes from very low E, string bass E, all the way up to piccolo C. So it's a rangy instrument.
When you get a new instrument, does it take some getting used to, or do you love it right away?
Oh, well, it takes a little time to find out what its quirks are, and because every instrument has some kind of quirk. So you have to, find out what it wants and then what you want and negotiate.
Yeah. What is the piece called that you just played?
Well, we could call it Quantum Flirts. I like to think about the fact that there are all kinds of things that we experience that are very instantaneous and that we don't even acknowledge, or just sort of out of the corner of your eye, or out of what was that I heard? That's flirting with the quantum field, I think, and so I think the peace comes out of that kind of relationship with the universe.
We have the CD queued up that we've been trying to play for about an hour now.
Maybe we'll get to hear it this time.
Yes, and it's Pauline's piece called Bog Road from 1964?
66. Or 67,
you did it at Mills College.
67 Mills College.
And we can listen to it and think of now there's supposed to be some great infestation of cicadas coming.
So oh, yeah, that's the 17-year cicada. Oh, they're coming. Yeah, yes, they are. And in fact, I'm going to make a special trip to New Jersey to record those.
Oh, I hope you wear some special protective gear. So, yeah, we have it queued up now. This is, we'll listen to some of Bog Road by Pauline Oliveros.